Okay, so today we're looking at free to be in Him, and I've used there's a new like software we've got with church for PowerPoints, things like that, called Proclaim. So hopefully it's all going to go really smoothly, and all the slides will just appear on cue because our tech guys are that brilliant. Yeah, so there was loads of problems before the service, which you never even saw. They just smoothed over it, all the screen not working. Fab. Okay, so I'm going to look at Colossians 3, and we're looking at free to be in Him. I'm going to read the passage first, and then we'll get on to tell a bit of story and things like that. So hopefully it'll come up on the screen. So if you want to follow Colossians 3, 1 to 11. There. Do we have any slides at all? Right. Okay. Can I borrow your Bible? It was nearly so smooth, hey? Thanks. Thank you. I thought, yeah, it's okay. I've got it. And it's underlined in Joe's Bible as well. That's cool. Okay, so since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature: sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourself of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. There is no Jew or Gentile, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. Okay, so we're looking at this passage, and I just wanted to start with a little story about when we went on holiday last year. We went to Centre Parks. Any Centre Parks fans? Give me a whoop. Okay, Centre Parks is amazing. Joe always used to go and tell me how good it was, so we thought we'd try it, and instantly we're like, yes, we will come back here. It's really good. So they have like loads of stuff, brilliant for kids, and a big pool and all that kind of thing, and Jesse had gone the year before, but I think he'd forgotten about it. So we stopped on the way at the service station, and if you are a parent, you'll know all about this, right? You walk past, like, near the toilets, there's like a Bob the Builder ride on thing, yeah? So every toddler who goes past that wants to go on the ride along thing. Don't really matter what it is. I don't think he even likes Bob the Builder much, but he was like, Mommy, I want to go on that. So I did what all good parents do: let him sit on it, but don't put any money in. Yeah, that's what you do when you see those things. If it was grandma, right, he'd get free rides for a quid, but it was mum and dad, so he gets to sit on it and no money was put in. But he had to go steering and all that kind of stuff. So he loved this ride, and there we were on our way to Centre Parks. Time to go, Jesse, let's get back in the car. We're going to Centre Parks. We're like really excited. And he's like, no, I want to stay here on the Bob the Builder ride. And we were like, oh, no, but we're going to Centre Parks. And we were trying to explain it to him. He'd obviously forgotten. He was only probably 2 when we'd gone the last time. And it was a year later, he was 3. We go, like, there's a massive swimming pool. There's a huge play area. We're going to stay in a house that belongs to us. And it's going to be really cool for that week. And we're going to have loads of fun. And we'd tell him all this stuff. No, I want to stay here all week. And he had a toddler paddy in the middle of the service stations. He wanted to spend the holiday in the service station. I don't know where he thought we were going to sleep, in the car or whatever, but we literally had to drag him out of the service station, kicking and screaming, into the car, having a paddy. Didn't want to put his seatbelt on or anything. And he just didn't get it. He didn't get that we were going on holiday and that Centre Parks is amazing. Now, after he'd been, you know, we got there, he obviously loved it, and he wouldn't have obviously wanted a holiday in the service station. But, you know, the first part of this passage talks about set your hearts on things above. Set your minds on things above, it says in verse 2, not on earthly things. Because, you know, we can kind of laugh at Jesse and say he's a bit, you know, he's only 3 at the time. He didn't understand. He didn't get it. And we can see he's looking at something temporary. He's enjoying that little ride for 2 minutes. But really, what we were going to was much better. And you know, as Christians, sometimes we can be exactly the same. And we can. It's hard for us to get our head around sometimes everything that's in heaven. It says, set your minds on what's in heaven. And we can struggle perhaps to set our minds on something so great. And God tries to explain to us all the glories of everything he's got for us. But sometimes we just get like that stubborn toddler and we can set our minds on the things right in front of us that perhaps give us pleasure or at the moment, or perhaps is an obstacle and something that's getting in our way now. And we can only focus on that. And we struggle to see what's ahead. We struggle to see the centre parts, if you like. And we get stuck in that bit. But it says there that we need to set our minds on him. And it says in verse 10, the version I read it, it says, be renewed as you learn to know your creator and become like him. Because it's not just talking about set your mind on heaven for heaven's sake. It's talking about set your mind on him. Get to know God. Get to think about him. So I'm going to look at three things this morning of how we can learn to become like him. How we can set our minds in him and be free to live in him. And you may see a little bit of a DIY theme going through my preach this morning. It's just because we've just decorated Jesse's bedroom. So last week we had a bit of a decoration. Some of you, if you're my friend on Facebook, you would have seen some pictures pop up. I did have some to go on the screen, but as that's not working, you can have a look at Facebook later if you're interested to see what we've done with his bedroom. So there's a bit of a DIY theme going on. So my first point of how... Oh, it's working. Okay, brill. Okay. Is that the first slide? Okay. All right. Well, there we go. That's a little preview for you then, if you didn't see it on Facebook. We stuck comic book things on his wall. I think there is some more on there. We'll come back to that in a minute. You can just have a look at that in the background. So the first thing I've got is, number one, that we have to strip off and sand down. Okay, that's not strip off. That's talking about a door. Just get that clear there before anyone gets any ideas. Okay, so what we need to do, I'll just tell you about this door that we did before we lose everybody there. Okay, we decided we would gloss all the doors. That's one of them jobs that takes a bit longer, isn't it? And you do the gloss properly. And whoever decorated his room before didn't do a very good job on some aspects of it. So, for example, the radiator had been painted in emulsion and it was all flaking off. And the door, I don't know what it had been painted in, but all the bits had bobbled off and it just looked a mess. So my mum came over to help me one day while Paul was at work, and we started and we got a paint stripper. So we painted all the door and a paint stripper and it all bubbles off. Anyone ever used a paint stripper before? Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? It all bubbles off and then you scrape it and the bits get everywhere, like all over your house. And so we did that, and then my mum said, just put a bit of primer on it or whatever. So I came to it the next day and it wasn't brilliant, if I'm honest. Like, it was still a bit bubbly. It could have probably done with another layer of stripper and a good sand down, but I was getting a bit lazy by that point. I'd been working on doing the bedroom all week and I thought, oh, I'll just stick some primer over it. And so I painted it over with primer, and I'll be honest, it looked pretty dreadful, right? And then Paul was off the next day, but I was at work, so I'd given him the job of finishing the door. Now, Paul is a bit more particular than me on some things, probably a bit more of a perfectionist than me, particularly on stuff like that. So this particular time, that was a really good thing. And I came back, the door had not been glossed, but he'd stripped off all the paint that I'd put on and sanded it down and actually done it properly. So by the time I got home, it actually looked good again, and then we glossed it. So Paul's way was the proper way to do it, but I just kind of was a bit lazy, if I'm honest, and thought, I'll just gloss over it, you won't be able to tell. You could tell. So if you're ever going to do that, don't get me to help you. Get Paul. He will do it properly. That's my advice there. But this kind of passage, it's talking about stripping off things that can slow us down, stripping off sin, stripping off bad habits. And, you know, it may be the case that in here today there's people and you've got things in your life that God's saying to you, actually, you need to strip that off. You need to get rid of that thing. You need to get the paint stripper on your life and kind of get rid of it. And sometimes we have that tendency that we just want to kind of gloss over it a little bit and we get the paint out because it's a bit easier, because stripping off paint can be, or stripping off things in our life, sorry, can be a hard process to go through. It can be painful. Like, the door didn't look like he was having fun when I was doing it. It looked like it was difficult for it. And so it can be a difficult thing in our lives. So I'm just going to look at two verses. First one's in Hebrews, if I can find it. So you can follow along if you like. Here we go. Hebrews 12 is a really famous passage in verse 1. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great crowd of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of the faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I didn't really need that last verse, but it's Joe's favourite, so I thought I'd add it in for. Okay, but that bit there, it talks about stripping off everything that entangles, running the race that God has set before us. And through that passage, you know, we saw all those examples it gave of things to start to strip off. It says, now you've become a Christian, strip off these things in your life. Get rid of the sin that's entangling you. Let go of those things that are slowing you down. And sometimes that's a bit of a painful process. So instead of going through it, we decide we'll just sort of gloss over it a bit. So, you know, we've got a few bit of sin in our life, but we go, oh, well, it's okay. I'll put a bit off, like a bit extra in the offering this week. That'll sort it out. God won't mind, because put a bit of extra money in the offering, or it's okay as long as nobody sees it. As long as nobody sees that bit of sin in my life, that's all right. I always say it's okay because I do loads for church. I'm a really good volunteer and they need me, so it doesn't matter if these bits and bobs aren't quite right. But you know, just like me when I was glossing over the door and you think it'll cover it up, it doesn't. And God wants us to actually start to strip back those things in our life instead of justifying what we're doing and actually dealing with it. And the guy in the Bible, David, who you've all heard of, kind of learned how to do this. He really messed up when it came to Bathsheba, and he had an affair with her. And he came to this place in his life where he realized that he just needed to sort it out with God. And we get the amazing Psalm 51. And I was reading it in the Passion Version. And it just really highlighted some things to me. So I just want to read. You don't have to follow it because it's probably totally different to your version. But it says, God, give mercy from your foundation, from your fountain of forgiveness. I know your abundant love is enough to wash away my guilt. Because your compassion is so great, take away this shameful guilt of sin. Forgive the full extent of my rebellious ways and erase this deep stain of my conscience. For I am so ashamed. I felt such pain and anguish within me. I can't get away from the sting of my sin against you, Lord. Everything I did right in front of you, for you saw it all. Against you and you above all, I have sinned. I wonder when was the last time we felt like that about our sin, that we felt that guilt and that shame to come before God. And verse 16, it says, for the source of your pleasure is not in my performance or the sacrifices I might offer you. How often do we try to please God with what we do for him or something that we can give him? But David understood that there was a principle that was more important than that. It says, the fountain of your pleasure is found in the sacrifice of my shattered heart before you. You will not despise my tenderness as I humbly bow at your feet. God isn't interested in what we can do for him. You know, he's got great plans for our life, don't get me wrong, and he loves it when we serve him. But he's interested in our heart. He's interested in that brokenness that when we come to him and go, God, you know, I need you. I've messed up. I want to get rid of this stuff in my life. That's when God can really come and start to work in our lives. And maybe some of us just need to start to strip back those things that slow us down, those habits that we've got into, or that sin that's entangled us. And I don't know what that means to you. That might mean talking to someone. You know, Joe already mentioned about confessing to someone and praying with each other about those things that might be in our life. It might be just getting before God on your knees and going, God, just help me with this. You know, that stripping back, it's sometimes painful, but if we don't do it, we're just trying to cover up what's already there. We're just trying to gloss over it. But there's a second part as well as the stripping off. We had to sand the door down. And you know, God uses other things. It might not be talking about sin here, but God uses circumstances sometimes to sand off our character. And he uses things to come and help us. That might be like somebody, it might be a person who just kind of rubs you up the wrong way a little bit, you know, person who annoys you a bit. And it's like God's got the fine grained sandpaper and he's just giving you a little smooth off there. And it's like Math was saying about us just being able to live in harmony with each other and make allowance for each other. Those people sometimes God may have placed in your life who have a different personality to you, and it's just fine sanding a little bit, just smoothing you off. You know, there's other times when he gets a chisel out. And he starts to shape you a little bit. And Jesus was actually a carpenter. I know most of you know that. I said that like it was a revelation. Jesus was a carpenter. thanks, Joe. So he knew all about getting a piece of wood and shaping it into something. He knew what he was doing. He knew all about how to get a bit of wood and, you know, to shape the legs of a chair out of it and to sand it off and to smooth it and to make it good and to make it right. And so he knows in our lives even more so, doesn't he, how to shape us and mould us and make us into the people that he wants us to be. And you may have situations in your life where you feel like you're being sanded down. And you may feel like God's working on you. And I just want to encourage you this morning that God knows what he's doing in that. You know, I feel like a little bit like I've had one of those months where God hasn't just sanded, he's kind of got a chisel out a little bit and just whacked it a little bit. And, you know, some things have happened and it's took us aback. But I know that God is working in that. I know that he's shaping us. I know that his hand is in that. And I just want to read you a passage out of James. It's in James 1 and verse 2. And it says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work in you so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault." So it just talks about there about being thankful for our trials. Now that's easier said than done, isn't it? It's all right reading that out. But when you're in it, it's not always easy. But I want to encourage you this morning. There was a guy who read the passages in the Bible about God being like a goldsmith, about him, you know, heating the gold and all that. The Bible talks about the impurities going from us and all that. So he went and he found a goldsmith. And he said, "Why does a goldsmith do what he do? Why does he heat it up so high and all that kind of stuff? Tell me a bit about the process of making gold." And so the goldsmith says this to him: "We heat up gold to, number one, burn away its impurities." So when we're through those trials, sometimes God is burning away those impurities in us. The number two was to bring the gold to such a high gloss that the goldsmith can see his reflection in it. I love that. So how does the goldsmith know when it's hot enough? How does he know when it's finished, when he starts to see his face in the gold? And you know, if you're in here and you've had trials and things that you've gone through, I pray for you that people will be able to see God's reflection in you more and more as you allow God to shine you, as you allow God to shape you. And the third thing was to make the gold malleable enough so that the goldsmith can shape it however he chooses. I don't know if you've ever been through a situation where you just feel like you're a bit battered, where, you know, life has just hit you hard. But, you know, as God heats you up, all of a sudden, I don't know if you've ever felt that, where you feel perhaps fragile, but you also feel moldable, like you're in God's hands and you're soft in his hands. And he just uses it to shape you into the person that he wants you to be. And I want to tell you this morning that there is always purpose in that, that God always does it with a purpose for your life. The fourth thing is that it increases the strength of the gold. Increases its strength. As it gets heated and shaped, it increases its strength. And as we go through trials, when we do it in a godly way, our strength is increased. And finally, the value of the gold is increased. God is working in all those situations that feel tough. You know, you've got the door, it's getting sanded, it's getting chiseled, whatever God's doing, he is working and he is smoothing you out. He is making you into more of a likeness like himself. And I know this perhaps isn't the nicest kind of point to start out with, but as we learn to be like our creator, part of that might involve stripping off those things, and it might involve God sanding us down. It might involve God shaping us into the people that he wants us to be. But I just want to tell you this to finish off this point, that the goldsmith said that he can never let the gold become too hot in the fire, otherwise the gold bubbles, and he can't let it cool down too quickly, otherwise it becomes brittle. And the goldsmith knows what he's doing. He knows as he puts that gold into the fire, he knows when it's too hot for the gold, and he knows how to cool it down. And I just want to say to you, if you're in a situation, if you're in a tough time, a hard season, God has got his foot on the accelerator and the brake, and he knows what you can handle. And if you're there going, "I can't handle this," maybe you're a bit stronger than you thought. Maybe God knows that you're a bit stronger than you realize. The second point for this morning, after strip off and sand down, is that store up treasure. There's a verse in Matthew which says about storing up treasure in heaven. It says, "In earth, you know, thieves can get it and moths can eat away, but in heaven, it's intact. So store up your treasure in heaven." And, you know, we decided, it was quite funny, on the Thursday night, we'd been decorating Jesse's room for just nearly a week, and we were there Thursday night, finished it off. Jesse was in bed, it was about 11 at night. Now, me and Paul, if you know a bit about us, we're quite focused. If we start something, we like to finish it, and we like to plough on a little bit like that. And when you get us together on a task, it's not always a good thing sometimes. We're a bit too enthusiastic. So here it is, 11 at night. Thought, right, we'll wash all our brushes. We'll, you know, get all the paint off them, then throw them in the bin because we can't be bothered. And so we did all that. You've all done it, okay? And then we decided, like, all his furniture was in our bedroom. And his bed was in our bedroom. Now, our bedroom just fitted the bed in there, so it was quite a squash, and all his furniture. And there he was sleeping. And we kind of went, should we just move all the stuff now? So we decided, we lifted him up, put him on our bed, and he sort of stirred and then went back to sleep. It's all good. So me and Paul, it was hilarious. We were sneaking the furniture out the room. Have you ever tried to move furniture quietly? Yeah, and so we're there like with a big bed, like walking past his head, trying to be quiet, and then bringing his wardrobe in. And it's getting near to midnight, but we're like, we're nearly done. Let's get his books back on the shelf. Let's do it all. And so we managed to get everything back in his bedroom, and then we managed to sneak him back into his bed. And we were like, this is so cool. He's going to wake up in the morning, and he's going to be like, whoa, look at this room. It's amazing. It's got superheroes on the wall and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, woke up about 2 a.m. crying, going, Mummy, I don't like my bedroom. And came, he didn't work out to plan. That wasn't the goal. And I managed to, so I ended up sleeping in his bed, and he ended up sleeping in our bed with Paul. So that wasn't as we planned. But in the morning, I tried to get out of him. You know what, don't you like about your bedroom? You wanted superheroes, so that was really cool. And he went, I don't know where all my toys are. My toys are gone. And what had happened is we'd had a good tidy up, right, and put all his toys away and in cupboards and things like that. And he didn't know where his toys were. You know, to Jesse, his toys are his treasure. And it wasn't that he didn't like the decor of the room. He just couldn't find his stuff. So when we showed him where his stuff was and made sure all his toys were back in his room, he liked it again. And you know, this passage here where it's talking about storing up your treasure. And there's another person who talked about that as well in Philippians. So I just want to quickly look at that as well. And it's Paul. And again, you'd probably be familiar with the passage. So it's Philippians 3, verse 7 to 9. It says, whatever, I should underline this one as well. You've done well for me this morning, Joe. Whatever were gains to me now, I consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them garbage that I may gain Christ and be found in him. That passage is just amazing, isn't it? That Paul is talking before that. He's not just talking about material possessions. He's talking about all the things that were really important to him. And he mentions things like his education, his status, his reputation, what other people thought of him. All these things that were so important to him. He says, compared to knowing God, they are just garbage. They're rubbish. And I want to just challenge us this morning. If we're going to know Christ, it's talked about learning to know our Creator. We need to start to put his kingdom first, store up our treasure in his kingdom and not in those other things. And I don't know what it is for you, whether it's possessions, whether it's what other people think of you, whether it's your reputation or your education or whatever it is. Consider them rubbish compared to knowing Christ. You know, back to the basics of our faith, how much time and effort and energy do you spend up storing that treasure? How much time do you spend in your Bible, in prayer, in worship, serving him? Because when we put our effort into the kingdom, that's where our treasure will be. You know, some of us, we might get to heaven and we might be a bit like Jesse and go, where's all my stuff? You know, where's all my stuff that I stored up on earth? It's all gone. I can't take it with me. But maybe for others of us, we'll get there and all our stuff that we've spent our life working towards will be right there. Which one are you going to be like? Are you going to be like someone whose treasure is invested in the kingdom? Or are you going to be like somebody who has just invested their whole time on earth into stuff of earth that is actually in the long run meaningless? It's going back again to looking at the long term, you know, looking at the things that God has asked us to look for. So where do you place the most values? In Connect, in Family Connect, they've been doing a thing, Quit It Thursdays, off Bob Goff. Some of you have done the series with us, and they quit something on a Thursday. And with a variety of success, some people have done really well, some people have tried a bit, and then we've not managed it or whatever. But, you know, it's a really good principle, isn't it? That sometimes, that's not just like quit your job, by the way, or anything like that. I think the youth are all like, oh, yeah, do we quit school then? I was like, no, that wasn't the point. But maybe quitting something to make room for something good. So quitting something that perhaps consumes your time a little bit and making way for something that's more important. Simplifying a little bit. So maybe for some of us, we just need to do that. We need to go, okay, is there something I can just move out of my life just to make a bit of room for God so I can invest a little bit more into his kingdom? I just think that's a great idea. And well done for everyone in Family Connect who's managed to give up something, because I haven't done it yet, so I feel a bit hypocritical saying that. I'm going to have to give up something now. So where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And finally, remember where you've been. Remember where you've been. Now, I did have some before and after shots of the, I don't know if they're on there. This is a before and after shot of a playhouse. Yeah, ooh, We did that as well. That's our project a few years back. So if you just saw the nice picture on its own, it wouldn't be as much impact, was it, as if you saw what a kind of dump the playhouse looked like a bit before. Now, I can't take all the credit for this. This was mostly Paul's dad working on this one. And he laid paving slabs and he did all that, and his mum weeded, and they did the windows, and they put a whole new roof on. And actually, in the end, I think I just painted. I think that was my only contribution. But hey, it looks pretty. So we did all that. And the reason I was kind of drawn to this is because we love before and after shots, don't we? We love looking at what was before and what was, if you like, you know, them home programmes. Any secret watches of Homes Under the Hammers in the place? Anyone can admit it? Yeah, brilliant programme. Okay, we love looking at what the house looked like before. It was falling down. It was a dump. And then look at, they've transformed it and it looks brilliant. And we love that, don't we? And in this passage, it actually starts with a bit of a before and after. It starts with, since you have been raised in new life to Christ. Since you've been raised as a before. There was something else before that, but now God's brought you into this new life. And it's good to look back sometimes and remember the before and after. We do it in our relationships. We kind of reminisce with people, don't we, about what's been. Like me and Joe sit all the time and go, do you remember when we did that crazy game where everyone died? No, not really. But everyone could have died, maybe, in some of them. But yeah, we did all that kind of stuff, and we'd sit and we'd talk about how we came up with small sister over pizza and all that kind of stuff, and we reminisce. You know, when me and Paul got married, you kind of look back and you go, oh, when we first met, and we look at how we first met, and then, you know, on your anniversaries you have a look back and remember our wedding day. And that's just what you do, isn't it? You look back and you reminisce about your relationship. But we need to remember to do that with God as well. What's God done for you? What amazing miracles has God performed that you might have just put to the back of your mind? You know, the Israelites did this when they were in the desert and they forgot all about what God had done. He did amazing things. He took them through the Red Sea and did all the plagues of Egypt and all that kind of stuff. But then they kind of forgot. And it says in the Passion Version of Psalm 78, take, for example, the sons of Ephraim. Though they were all equipped warriors, each with weapons, when the battle began, they retreated and ran away in fear. They didn't really believe the promises of God. They simply refused to trust him and move forward in faith. They forgot his wonderful works and the miracles of the past. Even their exodus from Egypt, the epic miracles of his might, they forgot the glories of his power at the place of passing over. God split the sea wide open and the waters stood at attention on either side as the people passed through. Is it me or would that be quite hard to forget? You know, you walk through the sea, on the, you know, it splits apart. That's quite difficult to forget. But they did. It says, in their hearts they tested God just to get what they wanted, asking for the food they craved like spoiled children. They grumbled against God himself, demanding he prove his love by saying, can't God provide us for us in this barren wilderness? And then in verse 21 it says, God heard all their complaining and was furious. His anger flared up against his people, for they had turned away from faith and walked away in fear. They failed to trust in his power to help them when he was near. And you know, Paul just read at the beginning just about God flexing his muscle. I love that. You know, God is all powerful. God is mighty. God flexing his muscle. It's so easy sometimes to forget those things that God has done. You know, to forget the before and after. I was like this, but God has done this. Maybe God has done something amazing in your life. And I just want to kind of leave you with this challenge this morning. Is just remember, sit and reflect on those things that God has done for you or people you know. Maybe tell somebody about it. Maybe think, oh, no one wants to hear that old story again, you know, that I've pulled out. But actually, yeah, remind, pass it on to the next generation. You know, that God did this. And think about it. Think about remembering it. Because it's a bit like we have them before and after shots. You know, our lives may look good now, but let's remember, what did they look like before? What would they be like if God wasn't involved? And that's kind of the third thing of being in him. Let's remember the mighty miracles that God has done for us. And let's not forget the things, the great things he's done. Because as we remember the before, then we'll remember and realize what he's done in our life. So just to conclude then this morning, say first of all, let's strip off anything that slows us down. Let's strip off the sin. Sometimes a painful process, but let God shape you, let God mold you into the person that he wants you to be. And as we do that, we get to know him better. Store up your treasure in him. Make sure that God's kingdom is your first concern, and he will give you all those other things, those desires of your heart. And finally, remember where you've been. Remember what God has done for you. Remember those miracles. And when we do that, we can really be free to be in him and to live in him. I'm just going to pray before the band or Joe comes back up. God, I just thank you this morning that you have purpose for every one of us. God, wherever we are in life, whether we feel like we're in a great season or whether we feel like it's tough, God, you have got your hand on us. Lord, you're like that goldsmith who puts us in the fire, but you shape us and mold us, and there's always purpose in it. And I just pray for anyone in here this morning who just needs that loving hand, God, just to let them know, God, that your hand is in control. God, I pray they'll know that this morning. God, if there's anybody that just needs to strip back some of those bad habits and things maybe have caught them up, God, pray you'll give us the strength, Lord, to talk about it, to be able to let go of those things and to go through the process of stripping back sometimes, God. Father, let our treasure be in you. God, we pray that we will give more time this week into knowing you, into prayer, into worship, into serving. And God, finally, I pray, Lord, that we will remember where you've brought us from. We'll remember those miracles that you've done in our life, God, and that we will be able to pass those things on to the next generation. In your name, God. Amen.